This webinar is being transcribed and summarized.
Good morning. Today is Friday, November 14th, 2025. This is a regular meeting of the Building Inspection Commission. I would like to remind everyone to please mute yourself if you're not speaking, and to please mute all electronic devices. The first item on the agenda is roll call. President Alexander Toot.
Here.
Vice President Ming.
Here.
Commissioner Calamucci.
Here.
Commissioner Lee.
Here.
Commissioner McLeese.
Here.
Commissioner Williams.
Here.
We have a quorum, and Commissioner Newman is excused. Next, we have our land acknowledgement.
The Building Inspection Commission acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you. For any members of the public that are listening in, the public comment call-in number is 415-655-0001. Access code is 2664-484-4386. And the WebEx webinar password is 1114. I also wanted to announce that agenda item 6 is going to be removed from the agenda. However, if there are any members here for a public comment for that item, when we get to it, you can still speak for public comment. So next, we have item 2, President's opening remarks.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your patience as we get started. I'll keep my remarks short so we can make sure we make it to our out time at 1 o'clock today. Today we're going to be hearing about updates to the state legislation. We're going to be looking at some legislation here, making recommendations. The big two items I'd like to draw the public's attention to is number 9, the discussion around the Commission Streamlining Task Force and the memo and the recommendation. We will be deliberating and possibly taking action on a recommendation from this body to take to the task force. And the second is that during in number 10, during the future agenda items, I will be asking commissioners to consider. We've invited the mayor's office to show us the inside of Permit SF, and we will be we put some questions, and certainly we talk about this new permit system at almost every BIC meeting. And if you have questions or things you'd like to see, we'll be discussing them in item 10. And then finally, thank you again to the staff for some of the newly restructured director's reports. I'm excited about the new structures, and thank you for the work that's gone into it. And again, if there's feedback on some of the new structures or things you'd like to see, we welcome that as well. Thank you. So Nick, you can call the next item.
Thank you. Is there a public comment on the president's opening remarks? Seeing none, item 3, general public comment. The BIC will take public comment on matters within the commission's jurisdiction that are not part of this agenda.
Good morning, Sonia. I have handouts. Thank you. And if you could turn on the computer, I'd appreciate it. Okay. Sonia, I'm ready. My name is Jerry Drantler. Code compliance problems at 147 Marietta Drive require investigation. Do they reflect a training problem or systemic corruption? Why is the city attorney Chu characterizing the illegal activities as a complicated scheme in his November 5 press release when it appears city employees enabled the illegal activities? We need answers from the deputy city attorney, Kesley Stewart, the head of the public integrity unit, and DBI compliance manager, Christopher Vergara. These are two pictures of the building. One is a Google Maps picture of June 2021, and one is a picture I took last week. The planning department notice of enforcement has been on hold since 2019, and it's still on hold today. The DBI complaint for exceeding the scope of the building permit has never been closed, and the last entry is June 2021, the same date as the Google Map picture. The NOV that was issued included the corrective action to stop work. As you can see from the picture, work did not stop. How was a $650,000 building permit issued to comply with the NOV when a complaint and a notice of enforcement were open? And the last inspection on this permit is December of 2024. The permit's never been finaled, and the special inspections have never been approved. If you look at the permit, you'll see the people who approved the permit. So in planning, it was Moses Corrett and Jeffrey Horn. In DBI, it was Kevin McHugh, Cyril Yu, Chu Liu, Richard Tam. A temporary shoring permit is open, and a $1 administrative permit should not have been issued to final an expired retaining wall permit. The unpermitted temporary shoring permit expired in November of 2023. However, and it's null and void, DBI's last inspection was April 2025. Why are they inspecting a null and void permit? Inspector Walsh approved 10 special inspections last week on November 5th. The permit to legalize a retaining wall, terraces, and fences expired on May 2nd, 2018. The admin permit to final the expired permit, which is also null and void, should not have been issued. The permit was approved by Inspectors Gonzalez and Lamb and finaled by Juan Calderon. And there's a copy of the permit. When are you guys going to stop all this nonsense? That's your responsibility. You are oversight over DBI. Thank you. Okay. Oh, we're going to do the handouts too.
Okay. So I need the handouts as well.
Ready to begin?
Overhead, please.
You just place your item there.
It's already placed there.
The light is on.
Maybe nobody's home. I don't know.
There it is.
Okay. Okay. I'd like to move to my PowerPoint.
I need the computer.
I'm not accessing anything. It should be accessible just the way that you just used it.
It is,
but
it's...
You can't do both. You can't show the overhead and use the computer at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys have to figure out who's going to do what.
Turn off the light. Okay, I'm ready to begin.
DBI harassment of building inspectors that result in the suicide of three of my friends and co-workers. These are three out of approximately 30 field building inspectors in less than 5 years. My name is Chris Schroeder. I was harassed like my three co-workers who committed suicide. I was forced to seek professional assistance to deal with the DBI harassment I received.
One building inspector cut off his hand with a power tool. This is his second attempt. Another inspector jumped off the Duran Bridge on ID near the Flintstone House in 2020. The third inspector also jumped off the Duran Bridge in 2021. The third inspector called me just hours before he committed suicide. He complained to me about Patrick O'Riordan. The FBI got cell phones from this. Okay, and then next is the summary of the information. Okay, then the first guy that cut off his hand, and the second one, his occupation was actually a building inspector, and the third one is there too. He went into the trees, he was ripped to pieces. The second one lived for a few hours. I was forced to get professional help to deal with severe depression that developed as a result of the same harassment the three former DBI building inspectors endured. I was subject to inaccurate performance reviews based on false facts. I was verbally humiliated in front of other DBI inspectors. A member of DBI management commented that I had shit for brains. I witnessed pranks played on one of the inspectors, the last one who committed suicide. The prank brought the inspector to tears. I gave him a hug. I was transferred twice to positions where I was not qualified, and the positions did not accommodate my disability before I was terminated. Why are some of the DBI inspectors bullied? Inspectors who properly enforce the building code and refuse to sign non-compliant records or refuse to falsify government records are bullied. Three inspectors who committed suicide refused to approve non-code-complying conditions. The non-code-complying complaint work is ultimately approved by an out-of-district inspector or by another inspector or by a senior building inspector. DBI transfers problem, quote, inspectors to positions that the inspector is not qualified for or hold positions that do not accommodate the inspector's disability. If the inspector refuses a transfer, they are threatened with the loss of their job. DBI remains a hostile workplace. Two DBI inspectors are currently experiencing the same harassment that I have and the three other deceased inspectors experienced. DBI management needs to discipline supervisors who brag how they can make some of the DBI inspectors cower. One supervisor bragged to me that the inspectors he bullied crossed the street when they saw him coming. The city needs to discipline employees who bully. Thank you.
No additional public comment, and public comment is closed. Next item is director's report for a director's update.
Good morning, President Alexander Tooth and members of the Building Inspection Commission. I'm Patrick O'Riordan, director at the department. I want to start by saying welcome, Commissioner Lee. We're excited to have you on the commission and know your experience at the Chinese Chamber of Commerce, in the Labor Council, and at the Mayor's Office of Workforce Development will be an invaluable asset on the commission. We look forward to working together and getting your perspective as we continue our work to improve the department and the service we provide to the public. I'd like to invite you on a tour of DBI and the Permit Center so you can meet our staff, see our operation up close, and I'll ask Sonia to follow up. Thank you again for volunteering your time, and we look forward to working together in the months and years to come. Today, I want to give you an update on some of our work in the community. This past week, DBI Structural Review Manager Jimmy Chung and Building Inspector Jeff Barnes represented DBI at the Pacific Heights Residents Association. Members asked a variety of questions on everything from sprinkler installation on renovating in a historic theater. Next week, DBI, Rich Sorensken, and a senior building inspector in our plan review and a trained architect, will be speaking on an American Institute of Architects panel about building community. And we're working with planning, fire, and the nonprofit Be Chinatown on a series of workshops to help local merchants legalize existing awnings and security gates. Our hope is to be more directly engaging with the community so we can build trust and open communications that's vital to making sure people feel comfortable, safe, and informed when using our services. Thank you. That concludes my director's report. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Next is 4B, update on permit SF shot clocks.
Good morning, commissioners. Megan Walshui, Data and Performance Manager at DBI. I'll just wait until the presentation's up.
SFGov, can we share the slides?
Okay. There we go. Okay. Good morning. I'm pleased to be here today and give you an update on DBI's performance on the permit SF shot clocks. Next slide. Just a refresher on the targets that we have for these shot clocks. So our goal is to hit the targets for over-the-counter permit issuance sorry, I can't see the words through the captions. For completeness check, for first review, and for rechecks. Next slide, please. That's helpful, thank you. Okay, great. So the comparison of our in-house building permit issuance time in the last 12 months compared to the last month, we've had a significant drop from a median of 187 days to 148 days for the permits that have been issued within those time periods. And our over-the-counter building issuance time continues to hold steady at one business day median. Next slide, please. Yeah, one. Oh, there we go. Okay, great. Okay. We continue to hold steady at meeting the 21 calendar day target for completeness check review at 99%. And we've increased the number of first reviews that are hitting that 30 calendar day target from 72% in the last 12 months cumulatively to 97% in the last month. And for resubmission reviews, we've also improved. In the last 12 months, 88% of resubmissions were being returned with comments to the customer within 14 calendar days, 88% of the time. And in the last month, 94% of those resubmissions were returned to the customer within 14 calendar days. So as you can see, we continue to make progress. We're working really hard in a coordinated way, ensuring that our dashboards have the information that people need to know what's on their plate, know when things are due, and we'll continue to work with other departments to meet these targets. Thank you.
Sorry about that, trying to address the issue of the flashing TV screen. Next, 4C, update on proposed or recently enacted state or local legislation.
I've got them, yeah, thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Welcome, Commissioner Lee. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. Here to give a brief update on some of the local ordinances that have been enacted recently. Get the slides up. Next slide, please. Thank you very much. So two ordinances have been recently enacted since the last BIC meeting. File number 250657, which implements Senate Bill 937. That bill defers development impact fees from time of application to permit issue, or excuse me, to certificate of occupancy. The BIC reviewed that on October 24th and provided a unanimous recommendation of approval. Next is file number 250810, which authorizes deferral of DBI fees for specified affordable housing projects. If you recall, DBI was previously using one-off letters to authorize this deferral. This now codifies that change. Next, a few ordinances before the Board of Supervisors. File number 250630. This removes seven existing reporting requirements from the department's responsibilities, as well as numerous other reporting requirements throughout departments in the city. Next, file number 250811. This is an ordinance amending the building permit and building permit application expiration timelines. This changes from valuation, which we currently use as one of the only major jurisdictions to use valuation, over to a flat timeline for building permit applications and a rolling timeline based off of continual work for building permits. That will align us more with the state and with other major jurisdictions. And then lastly, the triennial code update is making its way through the board process as well. Lastly, the state legislative calendar. As you all know, the state has adjourned for their existing legislative session. They'll be back on January 5th. On January 10th, the governor must submit his initial budget. And then on January 16th, it's the last day for any fiscal bills to be reported to the Appropriations Committee that were introduced in their own house. On January 23rd, it's the final day for bills introduced in that house to be moved to the floor. And then on January 31st is the last day for each house to pass 2025 bills that were introduced in their house. There are really pretty limited number of bills that have survived to become two-year bills. In terms of the ones that affect DBI, we're not tracking any two-year bills, but it's all to be seen when the legislature reconvenes on January 5th. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next item is 4D, update on DBI's finances. Just one moment. You can go ahead and begin. Sorry. SFGov, if you can show the slides, please. There we go. Our apologies for having a technical difficulty. The screen is going to be flashing, so you could refer to your handout along with the screen.
Right, sure. First slide, please. Good morning, Commissioners. Alex Koskinen, Deputy Director, Administration. Commissioners Lee and McLeese, looking forward to working with you. I have the monthly finance update. We are very early in the fiscal year, so there's not too much to report. We have collected $22.4 million, or 30% of our charge for services revenue budget, and that is the majority of our revenue. And we have expended 26.3, or 29% of our annual expenditure budget. We will have updates for year-end projections in January. Next slide, please. Here are the numbers for all of our budget and spending by category, both operating and non-operating. Next slide, please. Here's the same for expenditure. It's very difficult to predict revenue. Nobody has a crystal ball, but things are looking good so far. We're a little bit ahead of where we expected to be. We're coming up on a code cycle, which I understand drives some people to get permits, to scramble to get permits that they may otherwise have waited on. So we could see even more revenue over the holidays. Next slide, please. And then lastly, this is a look at permits this year, year-to-date, versus the same period last year, year-to-date. Very similar. Valuation is about 9% higher, so all of this is good news on the revenue side. And next month's report will also be pretty quiet. The major update will be in January when we start getting into next year's budget. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on the director's report items 4A through D? No public comments. And commissioners, no questions, comments? No.
Yeah, I also, in this section, I also just wanted to announce and welcome Judy Lee to the commission. So welcome, and we're glad you're joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're going to be almost a full commission, which is very exciting. So it's nice to have a bigger tent, so we're glad you're here. Commissioner Ng, you had a question. I have one, too.
I have a question for the director. I was curious if the department is seeing an influx of permits going in before the code cycle change, and if you see that affecting review times early next year.
Good morning, Commissioners. David Kane, Deputy Director for Permit Services. We are anticipating, I think, some of the permits that would be submitted in the winter and spring being advanced and being submitted towards the end of the year to get in under the code cycle change. We are preparing to staff up to process a higher rate of permits. I think overall, over the coming months, that will smooth out. So we're just advancing some from the winter and spring. So I think overall, I don't think it will dramatically impact operations other than perhaps the last week or two of December, and we are doing our best to gear up and staff up to accommodate the extra work.
Any other questions?
One more comment. Every 3 years, every 3 years, of course, the code cycle happens to be at the holidays, so, you know, I mean, we have to factor that in and, you know, have the resources in place every 3 years to manage that.
Okay.
Perfect timing, right? The fiscal year implementation. I just had a question, and this was just a request to Alex, can we just have like a look ahead of what the budget process is going to be so that when we have a more meaty conversation in January, there's a lot of new folks that'll be their first out of budget cycle. So it'd be nice to have kind of a non-meaty conversation about the budget process apart from when we kind of get into the details in January. So if we could just have that kind of expected timeline, to the extent that you know it in December, that'd be helpful.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I can resurrect some of the materials presented last year, and if you have any new requests, please let me know. Happy to answer any questions about the process.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Just that they bear with us a moment. We're trying to take care of some technical difficulties. Is gonna NSF.gov, can you show this, the screen? We've changed the slides to the clerk computer. Yes. Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we're on agenda item 5, discussion and possible action regarding Board of Supervisors Ordinance, file number 251024. Amending the building code to create a permit and permitting process for hydrogen fueling station equipment installation, in addition to other requirements.
Thank you, Sonia. Good morning again, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. Before you is file number 251024. Next slide, please. So a bit of background here, Senate Bill 1418 was passed in 2024. SB 1418 requires local jurisdictions to adopt an ordinance that creates an expedited, streamlined permitting process for hydrogen fueling stations. The streamlined process must also be accompanied by a checklist of all requirements for these stations to be eligible for review under SB 1418. The law doesn't provide a ton of specifics, but basically says if you complete the checklist, you're obligated to get the permit, so the checklist must contain every requirement that the department needs. File number 251024 simply implements SB 1418. We've established a prioritized pathway for review for hydrogen fueling stations. If you could go to the next slide, please. Thank you. And as you'll see on the right side of that slide, DBI has adopted a detailed checklist which guides applicants through the process to ensure they're providing sufficient information for the expedited review. The department has no requested amendments at this time and is recommending support of the ordinance. The Code Advisory Committee met on November 12th, and provided a unanimous positive recommendation. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Is there any public comment on item 5?
I have a question. I'm looking at the code section, and it combines it with the EV charging stations. So for the EV stations, just an electrical permit is required by a licensed electrical contractor. But then I just want to confirm, under the requirements for the hydrogen fuel charging stations, it says it may require site plan, civil, architectural, fire, building, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing.
Correct.
So then is the expectation that those would all be signed and stamped by their respective disciplines, or is it that you just need a licensed electrical engineer to sign off on all those?
No, the licensed electrical engineer, I think that's specific to the EV portion. So I think the code section is maybe a little bit complex, but it's sort of slipping in a similar process, but this is a standalone process from the EV permitting. You do need different disciplines to sign off on those aspects. I think part of the difference here is it is also the hydrogen infrastructure, so it's not necessarily just the fueling station.
Right.
It's other associated infrastructure around, and so that could require other disciplines to sign off.
Okay. All right, just checking. Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there a recommendation? So I move to recommend, as is, file number. Where's the file number? 251024 to the Board of Supervisors.
Your second, Commissioner McLeese. Yeah. Okay. So there's a motion by President Alexander Toot and a second by Commissioner McLeese. I'll do a roll call vote on the item. President Alexander Toot?
Yes.
Vice President Ming?
Yes.
Commissioner Calamucci?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. And for item number 6, agenda item 6, file number 250718 is being pulled from the agenda as the sponsors of the ordinance are no longer pursuing the item and the ordinance will not be moving forward. Is there any public comment on the item? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to item 7, update on state legislation.
Good morning again, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. I'm hoping to give a brief update on some of the major legislation that has now been signed by the governor, and most of the laws would have to take effect by January 1st, 2026. If we could pull up the slides, please.
SFGov, can you please show the slides? Thank you.
Can we scroll up? Yeah, AB 253. So first up is AB 253. This is related to private professional plan review. AB 253 allows an applicant, if DBI cannot provide plan review within 30 days, to employ a private professional provider to check plans and specifications for a residential building permit. That private provider will submit an affidavit to DBI declaring that the plans must comply with all applicable state and local laws, and then DBI is required to review that affidavit and complete application within 10 days and either approve the permit or issue comments. Some of the major provisions for this law are that it applies to residential only, up to 10 units and 40 feet height as a maximum. It also applies to new construction, remodels, or additions. The private provider must be a licensed engineer or architect who does not have a financial interest in the project, and the law sunsets by January 1st, 2030. Up next is AB 671 by Assemblymember Buffy Wicks. This is a similar private professional plan checking law, although this is specific to tenant improvements related to a restaurant. Once an affidavit is submitted by the certifier claiming compliance with all local laws, all state and local laws, DBI has 20 days to approve the permit or issue comments. The notable difference between this and AB 253, aside from 253 being residential only and this applying to restaurants, is that the applicant has the ability to utilize this regardless of our plan review timeline. AB 253, we get this 30-day window to either succeed with our work and complete on time, or they can choose to go and pursue private professional plan checking. AB 671 does not require that. Other major provisions, DBI must audit 20% of AB 671 permits each week. It excludes fast food restaurants as defined by the labor code and only applies to interior changes of an existing building. So you can't be doing external remodels to make a vent out of a restaurant under AB 671. Next up is AB 628 by Assemblymember Tina McKinner. AB 628 makes it mandatory for a dwelling unit to provide a stove and refrigerator in good working order. Some of the major provisions of this law is that it excludes permanent supportive housing, SRO units, residential hotels, and dwelling units within communal housing spaces. It also allows a tenant to determine if they want to provide their own stove or refrigerator, but a landlord is not prohibited to make the tenant providing a tenant refrigerator or stove a condition of the lease. Next is AB 818 by Assemblymember Carrillo. This is an instance where a residential property has been impacted by disaster. AB 818 requires local agencies to review permits for a replacement building within 10 days of submission. So this applies to buildings that were destroyed or rendered substandard due to a disaster that was declared local emergency. So a one-off fire wouldn't apply here. It needs to be a local emergency. This came out of the LA fires where large swaths of the city were impacted. Eligible replacement buildings are modular or prefab homes or a detached ADU from the affected property. Third-party inspections to determine the existing conditions of a building prior to submitting a permit to repair or rebuild are permitted in this instance. Next is SB 543 by Senator McNerney. SB 543 clarifies that existing post-entitlement permitting timelines apply to both ADUs and junior ADUs. So similarly to all of our residential projects, completeness checks must be done within 15 days of submittal. But unlike other residential projects, which have different timelines under AB 1114, ADUs and JADUs have 60 days to either issue the permit or issue revisions if there's an existing single-family dwelling on the lot. Assembly Bill 920 by Assemblymember Coloza. AB 920 requires local jurisdictions to create a centralized online application portal for housing development projects no later than January 1st, 2028. The portal must allow for an applicant to track the status of an application, and we are under the impression that our existing permit tracking system fulfills the requirements of that law. Next is SB 489 by Senator Aragin, which requires public agencies to post the criteria used to determine completeness of an application for housing development projects. It applies to each type of approval through the building permit's lifetime, and the criteria must be posted online with the name of the approval so that it helps guide applicants through the process. Next is AB 1308 by Assemblymember Josh Hoover, which requires all cities and counties to conduct an inspection of permitted work within 10 business days of receiving notice of completed work for specified housing projects. This again applies to residential only, up to 10 units with a height maximum of 40 feet. The department currently meets those timelines for all completed work inspections. That completes the state legislation update. Happy to answer any questions or dive in a little deeper on any individual bills if there are questions.
Thank you. Is there a public comment on item 7? Seeing none, any commissioner comments or questions?
I have a question on AB 253. And sorry for not understanding the background for this. Is this just to accelerate? What I am concerned that it's just an affidavit, and there's no kind of vetting process. I mean, for DBI, I think that should be an approved vendor list. I mean, that's in line with DSA and HCI, where any sort of third party plan checker, Emeryville does this as well. They have to be pre-approved and vetted through the department. I wouldn't recommend this route.
So that question was posed to the author of that law, and he essentially said that is akin to corruption. The department should not be regulating the people that are providing this private service. If the department can't provide the service within that timeline, granted for us, then we shouldn't be dictating who they can go and pursue. There are indemnity clauses, liability clauses for the private professional provider to somewhat capture the concerns that you're raising. But unfortunately, this is how the law is written, and we don't have the capacity to provide a registered list. We don't have the ability to provide that list.
Just to clarify, because the state law says that this right exists, we cannot constrict it by saying you must use a pre-qualified list.
We could set up a pre-qualified list and recommend they utilize that, but there's nothing in the law that allows us to say we can set up this list and nobody outside of that list is eligible to do 253 review.
I think it's curious to at least.
I could understand, but I think DBI should have the ability to reject the proposed. It could be that the applicant proposes a professional for that third party. I would expect that DBI should be able to vet and reject.
The law does not give us that ability, unfortunately.
Is there anything we can do to kind of? I see David standing. I'll let David. I think David knows where I'm going with this.
Good morning again, commissioners. We are working on a process and organizing what kind of standards and qualifications we would like to see. We also have the ability, after the project is submitted, to review it and audit it if we so choose. So there will be safeguards that we're putting in place for this.
I just want to say, I think also the new permitting system, that this is something that we should think about flagging in order to also just monitor, right, and see what the trends are. Like, is it the same person coming up all the time, you know, or just like some to kind of understand how this actually may transform the industry. And while we cannot, the state law says what it is, that maybe there's some policies and procedures and things that we can look at internally. So I'm glad you guys are thinking about it. Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner, for bringing it up. Commissioner Williams.
Well, with this 253 legislation, the slide says that the private provider will submit an affidavit to DBI declaring that the plans comply with state and local laws. So it seems like, you know, DBI will at least receive the plans, but is there like an enforcement mechanism or some sort of, you know, if there's a false statement in one of these affidavits that are submitted, I mean, what's the stick for that? Is there a private cause of action? Does that go to the state attorney general? Is that something the city attorney would take up?
There are potential licensing repercussions here. It doesn't lay out specific actions that the department would technically take, but these are licensed engineers and architects. We could certainly report to the licensing board that something went wrong here. There is obviously a private right of action if you are told, but, you know, you hire an architect or an engineer to provide these plans. They sign an affidavit that turns out to be inaccurate. You know, as a private person, you can go and pursue that. The department does have this 10-day review period where we get the plans and the affidavit. And I think, and I'll defer to David, but it does seem like there is the intent here is to at least do a preliminary or a partial check to make sure that there isn't anything egregious there. We have the ability to issue comments in response to that affidavit if we do find something within that 10-day period.
And as many of you know, we also maintain the expanded compliance control list, so it is something we can monitor if we're getting deficient submittals on a repeated basis from certain applicants, that we can look further into those in addition to reporting them to the state licensing boards.
No further comments? Okay, thank you.
So just out of, so my understanding is just, okay, just to follow this logical conclusion. So DBI must review and issue a permit or comment within 10 business days. And if we don't, is it considered granted? Is that the?
It's deemed approved, yeah.
Yeah. And this goes into effect on January 1st?
AB 253 had an urgency clause in there, so it's already in effect.
It's already in effect.
AB 671 and all the other laws will take effect January 1st.
Public comments?
Just one moment.
If we cannot provide review within 30 days, then they have.
Yeah, apologies if that wasn't clear. So when an application is submitted, we provide a timeline. And so we have the opportunity to say, we will review this in 29 days. If they ask, we are obligated to give that timeline at time of application. If our timeline is 45 days, they have the right at time of application to go and pursue private plan check. If we say our timeline is 29 days and then 30, 31, 32 comes around, they can then go and pursue private plan check at that point. So it is, there's sort of both sides of where they can pursue early if we have a really prolonged timeline, or they can pursue in the middle of review if we exceed those timelines. But if we keep everything under 30 days, the department maintains all control and jurisdiction over the review of these applications. Apologies if that wasn't clear.
I did call for public comment, but you can speak for public comment, I guess.
Can I have the override, please?
You have to turn on the light and put your document there.
Yes.
Just one minute. Let me try to share this. Sure.
The general public, is anything not on the agenda?
Good morning. My name is Jerry Drantler. On the left side, you see the people who are on the enhanced control list. And I was surprised that Kevin O'Connor, who the city won a $1 million judgment, is not on the enhanced control list. Also, you can see from the lawsuit that Rodrigo Santos is on the list, but his partner, who's a structural engineer, is not. So I think I would suggest that the Department of Building Inspection put the engineers and architects who are problematic and deserve to be on the ECC list on the list. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is item 8, update regarding the slope protection information sheet.
All right, good morning again, commissioners. Before I get started, I do want to introduce our new manager of technical services, Vivian Wong. She's been with DBI for over 25 years, started as an inspector and is a licensed engineer, and very pleased and proud to have her stepping up to manage this important department. So in the future, you will be hearing from her from time to time. And she was a big help working on this slope protection update that we did as well. So thank you, Vivian.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
There we go. We're ready.
Okay. Good morning again, Commissioners. David Kane, Deputy Director of Permit Services. So at the Commission's request, I'm coming here to give an update on how we are managing a review of projects in landslide zones with the repeal of the soil protection ordinance. So as you can see on the map there, that was the previous version of the soil protection ordinance, where we were reviewing projects that fell within a 25% or greater slope zone, which covered a large swath of the city. Moving forward, next slide, please. We are going to be focusing primarily on the landslide zones, so a much more limited, focused portion of the city, and dedicating our resources to those projects that are really in these more dangerous, hazardous areas. We are still retaining the Mount Sutro and Edge Hill Mountain districts, where those will still be receiving SAC review, which is a publicly noticed third-party peer review. Those are specific properties, specific known areas where there is a significant hazard. So those will still be part of the SAC review. Going forward, we will no longer, though, be mandating SAC review for the projects outside of those specific zones. All right, next slide. So how we are managing this, we had a previous information bulletin, S19, that dealt with the soil protection ordinance. We also had an SO5 bulletin that was dedicated to the geotechnical hazards. And so we are merging the content from S19 that dealt with landslide zones into SO5. So at the bottom there in the red box, you'll see the portion that we added to SO5. And if we can go to the next slide. So very similar language that we had in the slope protection ordinance for identifying the zones, but again, primarily focusing on the landslide areas. So if you are within a landslide zone or immediately adjacent to a landslide zone, you may be subject to additional oversight. As a department, we have a vast amount of technical expertise and knowledge that we are fully capable of reviewing most projects, most geotechnical requirements, structural requirements. If a project gets more complicated, we may still seek third-party review if it is in or adjacent to one of these landslide zones. If we can go to the next slide, we'll outline some of those additional criteria. So again, these are similar to the provisions from the slope protection ordinance as far as triggers. We adjusted some of the requirements slightly, so things going from 500 square feet to 1,000 square feet. But what we'll be looking at is primarily new buildings of significance, so over 1,000 square feet, additions that are over 1,000 square feet, excavation of 50 cubic yards or more. And then we will reserve discretion for any extreme projects, large projects, unique projects that we feel need additional oversight. So with that concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Is there a public comment on this item? Seeing none, are the commissioners have any comments or questions? Thank you. Okay. Next is item 9, discussion and possible action regarding the September 19, 2025 Prop E Commission Streamlining Task Force Memorandum.
So, commissioners and members of the public, There's a commission streamlining task force that is reviewing all commissions and committees in the city of San Francisco and making recommendations on whether they should stay as is or merge with other committees. There are a series of DBI-related subcommittees as well as the BIC itself that are under review. The current set of recommendations is generally to take the decision, most of the decision-making recommendations or decision-making powers, I guess, that BIC has and the AAB have, and merge those with the Board of Appeals, and to have the BIC as an advisory body only. So that would mean that the kind of department oversight, the appeals we hear on department decisions, that those would go to the Board of Appeals, and the CAC and the structural the structural advisory committee, I believe, is the recommendations that those will be merged. And so the CAC, as we as many of you know, reviews legislation prior to it coming before the BIC, and the BIC then reviews it and makes a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. So they play kind of an oversight role and in that review. People are placed on the CAC and other subcommittees based on their own professional background. The Structural Advisory Committee does something different. Could someone from the department talk about the Structural Advisory Committee? They have a different role.
Good morning again, commissioners. So I think there may be some confusion in terminology, perhaps, that we have a structural subcommittee and then we have the SAC, the Structural Advisory Committee. Yeah. And so that SAC was what I was just reporting back on in my previous presentation, where that is an ad hoc group that is mobilized on a per project basis and that is paid for by the applicant. And that is mandated by ordinance. So it would require a significant change to disband that group. The structural subcommittee, that is a advisory subcommittee to the code advisory committee. And that group then provides input on our structural programs, structural policies, and then refers that to the CAC and then up to the BIC here.
So the other part of the work that the BIC does that is not being contemplated is the work that we do on housing. So the housing code and the housing division is unique to BIC, and none of the kind of oversight or roles that we play are being contemplated to be moved anywhere else. So I think that in terms of the kind of unique role that we play also in overseeing the care for our housing stock and for our rental housing stock, that is also not contemplated. There's no contemplation of where that would go because it doesn't fit with the Board of Appeals, which is where they're considering kind of moving all of this. So I wanted to open this up both to members of the public and to the commission. Madam Secretary, can you remind us when is the hearing was moved? It's December 3rd now, is that correct?
Yes, the hearing, it was originally going to be on November 19th, but it is now moved to December 3rd. And I was told that on the agenda will list the Building Inspection Commission, but it's fine to discuss the other subcommittees as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe I misunderstood the memo, but I thought that the BIC was recommended to stay as is, and it was just the abatement appeals board or committee that is being combined with the Board of Appeals. Is that right?
That was the memo, but that wasn't what came out of the committee's first meeting. So the committee, thank you for asking another clarification. So the memo was the original recommendation, and what came out of the recommendation that's going to the December 3rd is to make us advisory only and to take the powers and the oversight and put it into the Board of Appeals. And that would include things like the EEC, all the policy work that we do.
Thank you for clarifying.
Ready for public comment, or is there? Can you help us?
This is a little unique in that we were trying to discuss this first, but we can do public comment and then have further detailed discussion from the commissioners.
Okay. Let's do that.
So we'll do public comment.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jerry Drantler. If DBI is going to be merged operationally in the planning department, does that mean the Board of Appeals will be responsible for both departments? And that having been to a number of Board of Appeals meetings, they seem to be the place where all permits for the city are reviewed or appealed. Will they be doing like director performance appraisals each year? I mean, that's a huge change of scope for a teeny department. Thank you.
Thank you.
This room is tiny. Good morning, Juan Garcia, Chinatown Community Development Center and SRO Families United Collaborative. First, I just wanted to say welcome to all the new members and thank you to the commissioners that came out to Chinatown for some SRO tours, and we look for a future tour coming up soon. The decision on the BIC was actually deferred on October 1st into their next meeting. I think now it's December 3rd or something. So even though the memo says to keep, the actual decision hasn't been made, so it's right. been deferred. The concerning stuff from that meeting actually comes towards the end of the discussion. You know, they basically recommended to get rid of this body itself, which to us is a faulty conclusion and faulty decision for them to make. At least to my understanding and listening to the video and the testimony from the chair multiple times, it was riddled with personal biases stemming from their own previous work with this body in the past. The one thing that they definitely did not ask is, what can you all do? What's the capacity that you all have to make this, not just the BIC, but the department better, more efficient? So, and I think that's very misguided from the task force. You know, they did say that this body lends itself to corruption and graft. That's basically saying that every single one of you inevitably will be corrupted. And I don't think that's fair for the task force to say. You know, they made some other good points and stuff, that's great. But when at the end they're mentioning the work that they used to do, how it did not work out, rather than focusing on the work that you all are doing now and the work that you can do going forward, especially with our new commissioners, that's not fair. We wanted to let you know that the community understands and sees the value that this BIC body brings to the table in terms of housing, as well as building and electrical and plumbing and everything that goes into a property that someone is renting. The seniors, the families, people with disabilities, they see that value. So they want you to make that voice heard to the task force. Make your recommendations. Why is it important for you to be in this body? And maybe not even you, what the folks that would be serving after you. You know, just because they had some bad run-ins in the past doesn't mean that it is your fault and that inevitably it will be falling in the future. We thank you for your time, and we definitely would like to hear some good discussions from all of you. This is a very important body. The community needs you. The renter needs you. The renters needs you. It wouldn't be fair to just remove it completely after the community voted this body into existence. The community will stand up for this body. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you see any? There's no additional public comment, and commissioner.
Okay. Do folks have questions or comments?
I have a question. So the possible action here, what can we possibly do about this? Because other than saying, hey, stop slandering us over there, like what are we being asked to consider here?
Thank you. So the commission, we either can only talk as like individuals unrelated to the commission, or we can speak as a commission. And the action, what I would like this body to consider is to empower, because we can't do it by committee, because it's a Brown Act violation, but to empower the Vice President and I to write an email or a letter, a memo, to the task force and potentially meet with the, if they're available, to meet with the members of the task force to explain what the important role of BIC is and the actually to what some of the great work we've done is, and the that this can't just be merged into one big super board of appeals, that that there are that the, there are really unique and important roles that should be noted, and that the BIC should retain its decision-making authority and not just be advisory. And I would say the same thing for the Board of Appeals. The Board of Appeals is not about permits. It's about did DBI make an error? Is there, you know, it, was this correctly done? And that is different than should this permit have been issued, right? It's really, you have to understand the department in making a determination as to whether or not the appeal should be granted. And I think that kind of moving it outside of the department to a generic body, that would get lost, and I think it would be confusing for the members of the Board of Appeals to just suddenly absorb all these different kinds of appeals just because the word appeal in there, you know, it just doesn't mean they're all the same, and to have to understand the inner workings of many different departments, because that's not currently their scope. Their current scope is different than did the department make an error, right? So there's a pretty significant difference in the scope. And I think the also, like we just heard with all the legislation, right? There's all these deadlines constantly changing. There's policies, there's implementation. That is unique and different enough that it is important to maintain that. I believe it's important for us to maintain that policy guidance and that level of kind of accountability and closeness with the department that an advisory board just doesn't have. Commissioner Calamucci.
Sure, thanks. So I 100% support you all doing that letter.
Thank you.
Great job. and echo many of the things you said. I do want to particularly echo some of the public comment we just heard. Like, this is a commission and a department that was born of struggle. It was born by working people and tenants standing up to some real issues, and to sort of wave that away is, and imply that we're all corrupt, is a bit insulting. But you know, we should speak with one voice on that. So, and I also want to make an extra plug, if I will, for the Code Advisory Committee.
Yes.
That, I mean, this is only like my fifth meeting, and like, I think the work they do is so invaluable. To have that strong professional expertise, really looking at that, I can't imagine doing this without them. And so I would say, you know, speaking, you know, if we can speak for them, or you know, speak up for the importance of their work, I think is critical. So I thank you for volunteering to put that letter together and to go meet with the commission chair, and I appreciate the support from the public in keeping this body. Thanks.
Thank you. And you are all welcome to attend as well. So,
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kapla, well, you cannot attend as a quorum, and we would have to talk about any meetings and whether or not they would be a public meeting situation. But what I think you can do here, and what each commissioner could do individually, I want to make sure the roles are clear. You can, in this meeting, determine that you will draft a letter on behalf of the BIC. And you should highlight what will be in that as a letter to the commission to be submitted along with comments to their next meeting as an official communication from the Building Inspection Commission. But the outline and the content of that should be discussed here so that everyone agrees upon the content. You can individually write letters or submit comments on your experience as to what is here, but you cannot speak on behalf of the BIC individually. So that's to actually make representations on behalf of the BIC has to be made. The content of that communication has to be agreed upon and discussed at a public meeting. Thus, this discussion on what would be in the an official letter from the commission.
Thank you. Could I add to that a little bit, yeah, just to say that I was told by the task force assistant, Ms. Alonzo, that commissioners can come as individuals. We wouldn't want the full commission to come, but if a few of you could come, you could speak during public comment, but not you would be speaking as an individual, not mm-hmm. on behalf of the whole commission, but the letter would be on behalf of the whole commission.
And the idea for me is that it's difficult to, as we all know, we get our information ahead of time, we read it, and then we still hear public comment, and that shapes our thinking, is the same thing as being able to send this letter ahead of time so they can review it. Commissioner Lee.
Thank you so much, President Toot, Vice President Meng, Director Rarin, thank you so much, and my colleagues for such a warm welcome, and the entire department here today. I just want to stress, as the most junior commissioner being sworn in 12 hours ago, at its core, a commission structure like DBI really provides something essential to public trust, independent oversight, balanced decision-making, and a forum where community voices, as we just heard in public comment, industry expertise, and citywide priorities meet. So I feel like DBI's work touches every resident and every neighborhood. And having a standing commission like this right now ensures that this work is guided not only by technical standards, but by transparency, accountability, and the public interest. So please just let us know how we can be helpful to retaining this. This commission, you know, as I'm learning as we go, brings continuity, historical understanding, and collective judgment, qualities that are critical for an agency responsible for safety, enforcement, and fairness. Thank you.
So I'm writing this down so we can, in the spirit of the advice you were given.
So my understanding is right now, under the charter, this commission still has or has the power to hold hearings on matters related to the commission and the department. So we've been accused in a public forum of being inherently susceptible to corruption. So perhaps we should summon the task force member making that accusation to come and explain the basis for that accusation. And and that would, in addition to the letter, I think that would be appropriate. And if there is a grounds for that accusation, then for the fidelity of the commission and the department, we should hear it. And so, that's my recommendation. In addition to the letter, if they want to explain to us why we're corrupt and why we should have our capacity and powers diminished, then come and, you know, say it to us directly.
I also think it's important not to just be advised. I know that we have a advisory role on the budget, but being advisory committee, like making a recommendation from a body that has power versus a body that is just advisory, I think is significantly different, because when you have oversight or policy making authority, then that there's a level of gravity with which you review and understand, and which way you can compel information to come forward, right? Or to be brought forward. Without that, I mean, we have a great relationship, and I think that we, you know, like with the current department, I was here when the last director was here for a month, and it was a big chaos when it left. And, you know, for the remaining years afterwards, it was like people being arrested from the department, like the FBI raiding, like every couple months, like during those difficult times of transition and of accountability, like we have all done so much work to create a new culture, to create to compel new reports, presentations, and a partnership to transform the department into one where ethics is really central. And I think when you lose, we don't want to go back to that, and I hope we will never go back to that, and hopefully the structures we have created will protect us from that. But there is a, I just can't imagine the difficulty in having been an advisory body alone during that difficult time. And knowing that that is something that, you know, has happened and, you know, if we aren't vigilant, could happen again, that, you know, protecting the integrity of the department is also, I think, aligned with keeping the powers in the commission. And all of the ethics that we have to, I mean, I don't know, do advisory boards have to file Form 700s? Like, you know, say, do are the ethical standards of advisory boards actually as tall as they are for commissioners? I don't think that they are. So I think it actually holds us to a higher ethical standard as an actual commissioner versus just, you know, not having ourselves to take that ethical, those ethical actions. Commissioner Mengfrey.
I just wanted to say that I would be happy to collaborate with you, President Alexander, too, on this letter, and I also support the summoning of the task force members and having that hearing. I think as part of the letter, I would like to propose we also discuss, you sort of touched on it, our work with the city, the department's work with the city grants program. Mm-hmm. I feel like every year when budget season comes around, mm-hmm. and if the mayor says cut 10%, you know, we have to cut 10%, but I feel like due to your leadership and our continued collaboration with the city grant programs, we always try and find a way to fully fund those programs. And I don't know that, I think it is due to this commission that I think that continues to move forward. And then I think with the Abatement Appeals Board, I find that aspect of the commission equally important as well. It's almost the chance for sort of everyday residents to get like their one last chance to say what they need. And I, especially with, I think we like to think that building codes are black and white, but there's always a gray area, right? There's always like personal circumstances. And I feel like even though we're trying in that body to determine if the department made a mistake, we still have it in our power to, you know, like grant people extensions given sort of their personal circumstances. And so I think having like a public face that sort of everyday citizens can come to and like see how their concerns can be heard by the department is important.
Rob, I'm going to wait till Rob stops writing. I was just going to ask, does the motion have to summarize all of these ideas, or can it just kind of generally refer to the well-recorded nature of the conversation?
I think we, Deputy City Attorney Rob Kaplan, we should bullet point the areas that the letter is going to address, and then the motion would be to authorize the president and vice president to draft a letter addressing the bullet points. You don't need to name them all a second time. And that would be the motion.
Why don't I start by seeing how good my bullet point list is, and you can all add to it. Okay, by committee. Okay. Is it okay, City Attorney, Deputy City Attorney, is that these are broad bullet points that will be made into paragraphs? Or Like, I just have, like, housing division written down. Do I need to say more about what we will say about the housing division?
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kapla, I think it would probably be important to at least have a qualifier of the gist of the point that you would make. So I think what we've discussed thus far are the unique nature of this body to oversee or to be part of the city review process. So for the AAB, the unique nature of the same commissioners sitting over these matters, because they also sit over the policy matters. I believe we've heard that. The importance of the Code Advisory Committee in providing continuity and expertise in legislation code changes. So something about these three or four areas or five areas you may mention and what. And then you would have, once we've summarized those, you can have a motion to authorize the drafting of the letter on behalf of the BIC.
Okay. Would they get to? I feel less confident with my bullet points now.
I wouldn't have another meeting before.
Okay.
Okay. So we went to write a letter. This is not a motion, this is a statement. Prior to a motion, that will highlight the unique oversight role that the BIC and the AAB and subsequent committees have as it relates to the building, like oversight into DBI, into our unique role in the housing, overseeing the housing division, the importance of having the same body looking at the budget, the DBI processes, legislation. And upholding the technical standards, as well as building for the public trust. And I think, and then separately, the importance of having a body with policy setting abilities to influence the recommendations regarding the budget.
Sorry to interrupt the,
please.
The thought process.
No.
But, you know, so it seems like we're trying to outline what we're going to be putting in a motion,
yes,
for the specific talking points we want to include in a letter.
Yes.
Rather than doing that, could we just, as a commission here, vote to delegate to the president and vice president the responsibility, to speak on behalf of our body to advocate for the positions we've discussed in this meeting today? Or do we have to specifically provide a bullet point for each talking point that we want to include in the letter?
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kapla, I think what the president's outlined is pretty much captured what we want. We want to be able to point back to the discussion here and say that everything that is eventually in the letter was discussed at the BIC and received the agreement and consent of the commissioners beforehand. I think the one additional topic area, you mentioned sort of briefly public integrity, but I think it's probably important to do a temporal reminder of the efforts, initiatives of the commission since 2020, the changes, and also the ballot measure from a couple years ago that changed the composition and responsibility, which has only been a few months. So I think getting to the idea of, I believe, when the public commenters mentioned leaning towards or the propensity towards corruption, that a number of things have changed since most people maybe on the commission have had experience with the commission. So the commission itself has changed, the rules of the commission have changed, the department has changed. So I think having a temporal discussion of department-wide and commission-wide changes would probably be something to also have in the letter.
All right, one more thing before that. So we're discussing the framework for a motion for a letter, but Vice President Ming and I both mentioned having a hearing with the task force members.
Oh, yes.
So The motion for the letter will not be closing this agenda item, right? We would have a we could have the possibility for deliberation and a separate motion on the hearing. That
the letter couldn't make the invitation. The hearing, I think, is a separate enough item, and I would refer to, yeah, that.
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kepa, I think you can discuss, open an avenue for further discussions, or if they want more information, that we could put an item on one of our meetings in the future to discuss. We don't have the ability to mandate a hearing from people outside of the department itself. That's not within the power of inquiry necessarily for the commission. But you can make the invitation itself. If you want to have this as a separate item in the future, that would be, I think, when we get to item 10, that would be setting up or discussing whether to bring items back as separate items in future big meetings.
So in our letter, then we will invite them to meet with us in a BIC meeting.
Future meeting, yeah.
All right. And that'll be one of the docking points added to the motion. Got it.
I wonder if additional bullet points would be the fact that the director himself, along with other DBI staff, attend all these meetings, and so to have public comment directly to the director's face is, I think, an important part of this public transparency. And I think that's bullet point one. And then bullet point two is if the idea of this commission streamlining task force is to make the government more efficient, I don't know that combining multiple roles and responsibilities for one group is necessarily accomplishing the original intent behind Prop E.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think we should talk about how different the scope and the role of the Board of Appeals is from DBI. And while they both hear appeals, the significant difference in the kind of appeals and the importance of the the relationship and the understanding of DBI and policy and oversight to that. I have a feeling I can't just say so moved. okay. Do you want to?
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kepler, would be a motion to delegate the authority to the President and Vice President to draft a letter on the topics discussed at this meeting to be submitted for the next Streamline Task Force meeting. Comments?
I move to delegate to the President and Vice President the drafting of a letter to be delivered to the Commission Streamlining Task Force, summarizing the points discussed in this meeting.
Second.
So there's the motion by Commissioner Williams, who seconded Commissioner Lee. Okay, and I'll do a roll call vote. President Alexander Toot?
Yes.
Vice President Ming?
Yes.
Commissioner Calamucci?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
That motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just really want to thank the members of the public who came out for this budget item and who came. Like, it really means a lot to have you here and to have your support. You know, as a commissioner, that doesn't feel guaranteed. And so I just want to really thank you for that and the energy you're putting into it in your own time.
Thank you. Next, we have.
Sorry, I have a quick question. Yeah. Once we've written the letter, are we allowed to show it to the other commissioners for reference only, not for like additional comments? before we send it out, or is that not allowed?
Deputy City Attorney Rob Capola, that would lead potentially to a seriatim meeting if it went to a quorum of people. So the confines of what the letter is needs to be agreed upon by everyone here, which we have. We will obviously review the contents to make sure it doesn't stray from what we've discussed to be submitted. But if there are issues with the content later on, that can be discussed at another big meeting. But unfortunately, we don't have time for another regular meeting before, I believe, the comments are due to the commission, streamlining task force commission.
Thank you. But when we, maybe 5 minutes after we send it to the task force, could the commissioners receive a copy of, for your information, this has been forwarded to the task force?
Yes, that is a public record. That's a communication. It's like the staff packets for things here. You just yes. cannot have a group discussion on it or take any actions on it.
Thank you.
I think if it's correct, I can send it a blind copy to all.
Perfect. That's even better. Appreciate that. And thank you to the staff who are helping with this.
Thank you. So next we're on item 10, commissioners' questions and matters. 10A, inquiries to staff. At this time, commissioners may make inquiries to staff regarding various documents, policies, practices, and procedures which are of interest to the commission. And 10B, future meeting or agendas. At this time, the commission may discuss and take action to set the date of a special meeting and or determine those items that could be placed on the agenda of the next meeting and other future meetings of the Building Inspection Commission. And the next regular meeting will be on December 17th.
Thank you. Are there any? So as I had said in my opening remarks, we have invited the mayor's office to come talk about permit SF and what the program is. That we had someone from a representative from the mayor's office come several months ago to kind of give us the look ahead. Now they are in the building stage of the software, and there's supposed to be a very, very quick rollout starting in February. So this is the opportunity for us as the BIC to ask some questions, see what's inside. I believe that we refer to this mythical new system at every meeting. Oh, and the new system will be able to automatically close permits. And the new system will be able to track who's on the expanded compliance list so that the permit gets flagged and it won't get, you know, improperly reviewed. We talk about this all the time because what we've seen is that if you have a system where you can't kind of get in and make all these changes, and Tate, during your presentation, all I was thinking is like, oh, the new system has to be able to handle all of these various, like 10 days here, 30 days here, 60 days here, right? Like, because we have all these obligations to fill, and the folks who are building this is no small task. The constantly changing fees, the fee structures, the delay in fees, the fees will be applied at the beginning, the fees will be applied at the end, right? And so there's the importance of the system being built to get these nitty-gritty details right, both on the functional side and on the ethics side. I don't think there's anyone better situated than us to really like ask the right questions and to give influence. And so I wanted to both share that I've started this conversation with the mayor's office, and I'm hoping that you have questions as well that you can either bring up here or send to Sonia by next Friday so that they can absorb these in to their presentation and also get them your good ideas like as soon as possible. And I want to thank the director for helping kind of build this along with me. I just want to make sure that so the other thing that I've asked for is that when they come, that they present like what are their milestones for this project and what can the public expect, and kind of what are the what are the help desk options going to be? You know, what are the kind of rollouts and trainings, and what will this be like for our folks? And especially, you know, in the appeals side, like we hear the department error. We don't want a system to, you know, to be a sudden font of new appeals that we're seeing because, oh, the system said this, but really it was this, or, you know, something got cut off. So there's just so much care that needs to go in into the system, and I really applaud all the people who are working very hard in it, but I think it's a great opportunity for us as well. Do you want to, I don't know how we... We don't usually talk about this as much, so I went. Yes. This is more of an fine. Item than it usually is.
Yeah, that's totally fine. I just took notes on it, so it's one of the future items, and then you were also, I guess, providing information.
Yeah, and then if there's questions that commissioners have, and there's also look like there's public comment. So I don't know what order we go to. On this item.
We could do the public comment and then do the commissioner questions.
Okay.
We'll do public comment on this item.
Good morning. My name's Jerry Drentler. The new system, Permit SF, should address the current internal control weaknesses at DBI that enable corruption. We need to see the system's requirements document. Who is signing off on the system's requirement documents? Will the new system auto-expire building permits? Will building permits records be locked to prevent illegal alteration of public records? Will building permits records be locked when a building permit expires? This would eliminate district inspections of expired permits, and it would eliminate the approval of special inspections of expired permits. Will temporary occupancy certificates be managed in the new system? Are operational exception reports in the new system scope of work that flag prohibited operational practices like out-of-district inspections, inspections by senior building inspectors, the improper issuance of $1 permits to final, null and void building permits, and the approval of special inspections by inspectors who do not normally approve special inspections? Thank you very much.
Okay, that concludes a public comment. Commissioners?
Any other questions or things you'd like to see, things you're curious about? No? I know, I'm looking at the technical experts. So. What you got for me? Okay, great.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
As President Alexander Toot mentioned, you can contact me if you have any further items to include. So next is item 11, review and approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of October 15th, 2025.
So moved.
Is there a second? And there was a question, does Commissioner Ming Lee recuse herself since she wasn't here when the minutes were done, or she can vote on them?
No, she can vote.
You can vote. You can, okay. So for the minutes of October 15th, there was a motion to approve by President Alexander Toot and a second by Commissioner Williams. Is there any public comment on the minutes? Seeing none, are all commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Then the minutes are approved. Thank you. Next is item 12, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? All commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. It is 12:21, and we are now adjourned. Thank you.